Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Bill Grant, chair of the club's Health and Medicine Member-Led Forum and the chair of this program. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our speaker for the evening, Dr. Adiel Tell-Oren. Dr. Tell-Oren is a doctor who tries to help heal people naturally. Through nutritional supplements, through changing diet, through lifestyle, and perhaps some other little minor things that can help him without major surgery or drugs or things like that. He has a number of clinics in Israel. He has clinics in Minnesota. He makes frequent stops by the Bay Area, and Anna Coulter here is his representative in the Bay Area. I think, Anna, do you have some slides to show? Start with that.
All right. So, Dr. Tell-Oren, he has a whole network in the U.S., and I'm just one of his coordinators because he's a very ambitious person and always works too much. That was a really big heart, and you will see this more when you look at the slideshow. So, if you have any question, then I'm responsible for the San Francisco Bay Area, whatever he does, and for all his lectures. Like this week, he has a lecture every day, and that's his life because he believes in it, and he wants to turn around the medical system in his way. He's very successful in Israel. It seems to be a little bit easier there than in the U.S. But one step at a time, he hopes first to turn around Israel, and then he can has more success here also. And I just felt, you know, a picture often says more than 1,000 words. Therefore, I would like to show you a little slideshow about what he does in his life. So, we are on the first picture, actually. Here, he's getting his MD degree from Professor Charigan from the Russian State Medical University. And this university actually is the second place winner of the UNESCO competition for medical universities ahead of Oxford and Cambridge. So he has really a great medical background. This is just a break, a surgery break. Now, this symbol here is in front of a clinic he has in Minneapolis, and the clinic includes actually a raw food restaurant, believe it or not, and it's called Ecopolitan. And this is the sign you see before you enter the restaurant. Here's the clinic, part of the clinic. Go on. And here you see a menu of nice smoothies and juices and all that good stuff. And also something Dr. T loves to do is going foraging with some people. And I was one of those foraging weekends there with him. And here he just explained some flowers you can actually eat, some plants you can eat. So you know how to survive if you don't get anything else. And this is also at that special place. It's a geodesic. I'm Swiss, by the way, so forgive me for my funny language. Geodesic tomb at River Haven. It's a retreat center in nature, and Dr. T is the president of the community. The place is the world's first permaculture CSA, community-supported agriculture. And this is his bedroom, believe it or not. It's really very nice, actually, the treehouse. This shows the Ecopolitan Network, and one slide which right now somehow disappeared here is showing his bakery. He has a green bakery there and with gluten-free breads. But also what is special about it, it's not just gluten-free. It also doesn't include any other ingredients, which are really not great. Oh, and here we make a jump. This is a group which went to him to Nepal because he does support a lot of projects in Nepal, and I'm in the middle there, see? Nepal, Kathmandu. Hey, and the Himalayas over 8,000 meters. The seventh biggest mountain in the world. That's me coming over a bridge there. Dr. T knows how to challenge. I definitely was challenged by this experience. But why I'm showing this is really you get the feel for what he does. He really connects with local communities and helps them out and supports them and further gives educations and all kind of services. Right now he is trying to sponsor another school. Go on. It's a party. Yeah. This all speaks for itself. Here in the U.S., he offers natural skin removal, like if you have a mole or a skin blemish or so, he can remove in a natural way. And most of the proceeds, when you do that, go actually to those projects and to support Nepal. And yay, I like this. This is really nice in this park. It was possible to ride on the elephant, and then the elephant would go in the water and lower themselves in the water and then hose you down. And you get the natural shower from the elephant. And here he thanks the elephant in the end. It's nice. Okay, so that's it. Now let's welcome this unusual doctor here.
Good evening. Let's all have a seat. Make sure your cell phones are turned off if they haven't been turned off yet. And yes, it's always nice to have adventures in nature and to go foraging and learn about natural foods, natural plants, learn about not surviving but about thriving in nature, and go trekking in the Himalayas. It's all nice. It's all beautiful, and we can support our orphanages and our schools in Nepal, and you can all be a part of that if you want to join. I'm taking a group to Nepal in October. We're going to lay the cornerstone on a brand new orphanage in the mountains, in addition to supporting the existing school that we created through the Ecopolitan community, our nonprofit. We already have more than 300 children that are being educated, that are orphans and low-caste children, the ones of the poorest part of the society, who normally, if they don't get educated or have a framework, they might end up being sold to India as slaves, sex slaves or otherwise. It's a horrible fate, and all you need to do is give them a little education, a little framework, and that's all you need to do. That's prevention. And plus, that prevention has a nice side benefit, which they get educated. Otherwise, they wouldn't have even the opportunity to learn to read and write. So I welcome your participation. You can come to Nepal with me in October and see with your own eyes, but you need to be able to walk several hours a day, up and down steep mountains. Just keep that in mind, please. It's a challenge, but it's worthwhile. With all those excited activities, and I have 35 clinics in Israel, and it's just growing so fast, I can barely keep up. With all that, we have to always go back to the basics. And you came here to hear about oils and about omega-3. And I'm going to give you now what you have never heard before. The other side of it. People tell you what to take for omega-3, and I will tell you what not to take today. We'll focus on what not to do. Because many times, big commercial entities will sell you things, and then you'll hear it enough times repetitiously until you start believing. And you have a new dogma, a new doctrine that everybody accepts. Right now, the number one selling supplement in the world is fish oil. Number one. So we have all been indoctrinated to believe that fish oils are a panacea for many conditions. Partially because of old research that showed that there were benefits to people who ate fresh fish. And maybe to some people who took some fish oil supplements. But that was a long time ago. And it was easy to bury other parts of the research by thousands of papers that were supported and sponsored by fish oil industries. Especially now that they went into a multi-billion dollar craze, where everybody who thinks he or she knows something about health and nutrition enjoys fish oil supplements. Therefore, we need to tell you what not to do so that you don't harm yourself in the long run. Remember that feeling good now, having improvement now, is not an indication that you are not suffering in the long run the consequences of what you're doing. For example, very recently ABC has had a big expose whereby 10 different fish oil manufacturers were exposed as having too much petroleum byproducts, PCBs, dioxins, and heavy metals in fish oils that they were not announcing to the public in dangerous quantities. And recently there was a lawsuit where 8 top manufacturers of fish oil products were being sued in California for having excessive levels of PCBs, which cause cancer and mental issues. And people who are taking fish oil regularly are getting gradually poisoned, not knowing about that, thinking they're doing a good thing for themselves, and slightly poisoning themselves bit by bit every day. People are saying, well, the companies must have our best interest in mind when they are telling us how they are cleaning the fish oil from mercury and other heavy metals. But nobody can actually test the presence of mercury below a certain parts per million dose. So it could be some machinery down to 15 parts per million, maybe 10 parts per million. We should not have even 8 or 7 or 4 parts per million of mercury in our food. If you take it as a supplement, you are accumulating mercury, which even 1 part per million is too much as a supplement. And even the best companies who claim that they eliminate all those heavy metals can only eliminate so much where it gets to below detection level. Below detection level does not mean zero. It could be way above zero, but still undetectable. So you cannot trust an industry that presents a product that always comes from a highly polluted environment. The waterways everywhere are polluted, period. If you go for European brands, you see the same thing, and many of the European brands are claimed to be too risky to even consider. They're full with toxins, the one coming from Norway and Denmark and Finland, and they know it and they announce it. It's out there in the media. You cannot trust it. And then somebody will say, well, we are still going to sell you fish oil supplements because we know you're going to buy it, because you already have been hearing enough about it to be interested. So let us go to Peru and find some Peruvian fish coming from the pristine area of the Pacific, and then you're going to buy it. It's very easy to keep selling products that people already are convinced they need to buy anyway. As a result, there's always a new turf. It will be krill oil, or it will be Peruvian fish, or it will be something else, every time. The bottom line is, this oil, because it comes from polluted waterways, will always have cumulative toxins because the toxins are fat-soluble. They're going to be accumulating within the oil of the fish. In addition to that, these oils have been highly processed, deodorized, distilled in extremely high temperature. When you distill fish oil, especially high omega-3 oil, in high temperature, you're going to make it rancid. Rancid oil causes cardiovascular disease, exactly what you're trying to prevent. rancid oil causes clotting and atherosclerosis. Rancid oil accumulates in your brain, making your own brain rancid. Some of you already have rancid brain, you just don't know it. It's hard to know something when your brain is rancid. Rancid oil makes your skin appear old because your subcutaneous fat can by itself become rancid. Why do we have a problem with rancidity whenever we talk about fish oil? Not just because of the high temperature of the distillation and deodorizing and filtration that they have to engage in to make the fish oil palatable despite its original source, but because of its inherent instability. So let's just study a little bit about nature and chemistry, just a little bit, so that you understand for yourself what the science says on the most fundamental level, and then you can make your own decisions. First of all fatty acids that are long-chain fatty acids are of interest to us right now, because those are the fatty acids that incorporate into our own body's fat. When we talk about essential fatty acids, we normally refer to omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, normally. But we should not call them essential fatty acids because there's confusion. Some people will call EPA and DHA, which are marine omega-3 oils. EPA and DHA are the ones that we get from fish. We often call them essential fatty acids too. But they are not truly essential since our body can manufacture them. From what? We manufacture them from ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, which occurs in plants. That's the original parent omega-3 fatty acid. So instead of calling it essential oil, let's just call it for a second parent essential oil. The ones from which we have derivatives, the ones from which we can build up EPA and DHA in our own body, just like the fish does. These parent essential oils are ALA, omega-3, and LA, omega-6. Those are the polyunsaturated fatty acids, meaning unsaturated fatty acid that we would get from plants in nature, from nuts and seeds, from grains and legumes. Those are the plant essential oils that everybody has been getting in nature for thousands and thousands of years. They are the foundation of our cell membranes. They give us fluidity. They give us inflammation when we need it and anti-inflammation when we need it. They give our protection to cell membranes, to nuclear membranes, to mitochondrial membranes. They are part of who we are, and we need both omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids from plants all the time. Then our body manufactures out of them what it needs in terms of EPA, DHA, or even arachidonic acid, which comes from omega-6 fatty acids. So fatty acids are long chain of carbons, and they have double bonds or single bonds between them. Double bonds have 4 electrons, single bonds have 2 electrons between each pair of carbons. If we have only one double bond in a whole chain of fatty acid, we call it a monounsaturated fatty acid. A good example is olive oil, which is also known as omega-9 oil, oleic acid. Single double bond means monounsaturated. If we have 2 double bonds, it becomes polyunsaturated. If we have 3 double bonds, we are still polyunsaturated. If we have 4 double bonds, we are still polyunsaturated. Anything above 1 double bond is polyunsaturated. Poly means many, and saturated means not totally saturated with hydrogen atoms. When you're not totally saturating the fatty acids with hydrogen atoms, you're going to remain as a double bond. 4 electrons are being shared between 2 carbon atoms. That's the chemistry for today. Sorry for that, but you have to understand what a double bond is. Because a double bond is a source of instability. Whenever you have 4 electrons shared between carbons, two of them are going to be not in the axis between the carbons. They're going to be slightly further away from that axis, and it's easy by introducing energy into the formula to knock those electrons out of orbit and turn the fatty acid into a rancid oil, into a rancid, oxidated, also known as peroxidated, polyunsaturated fatty acids. When a fatty acid is peroxidated, it's called rancid. You can smell it. Open that bag of old walnuts and you'll smell the rancidity. But you only need to do one thing to avoid smelling it. Expose it to high heat. Roast it. Now you will not know it's rancid anymore, and you're going to eat it in large amounts. You can do the same with fish oil. You just have to heat it up, and all fish oil manufacturers are exposing the fish to high temperatures. So immediately you cannot tell if it's rancid. And it has more than one double bond. Every time you introduce an extra double bond, you are increasing the likelihood of the oil becoming rancid, because double bonds are unstable. That's why we prefer olive oil, since it has only one double bond, when we use it on salads or when we even stir fry, because it's more stable. It only has one double bond. But coconut oil will even be more stable because it has no double bond. It is saturated, so it's the most stable. Coconut oils can be used in cooking freely without it being rancid. But take a polyunsaturated fatty acid and put it in a hot environment, including your own body, which is a hot environment, and it goes rancid, unless it is protected somehow. That is why nature is the most knowledgeable provider of food for us. In nature, you would not have to think about what fatty acids are built like. You won't have to know what the chemistry is. You would simply eat what nature provides you. Since we needed always these omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids, we always got them from nature, and we got them from the right source. We didn't have to ask any questions about it. We didn't need experts to tell us what oils to eat. We just ate what nature provided. And what was that? Especially dark green leafy vegetables. That was our number one source of omega-3 fatty acids. And sometime when we ate nuts and seeds, we would get more omega-6 fatty acid. So we always got both in a good ratio. In nature, that ratio was somewhere between 2-1, omega-6 to omega-3. Maybe 3-1, omega-6 to omega-3. In some places, it would be 1-1, equal between omega-6 and omega-3. In some times of the year, it might have gone up to 4-1 or 5-1. Generally, there was always a little more omega-6 than omega-3 in our diet, but it was a good ratio. Most importantly, because both omega-3 and omega-6 are polyunsaturated fatty acids, meaning both of them contain more than one double bond, either two or three or more double bonds, we always needed to make sure we don't get too much of either one of them. Getting too much omega-3 and omega-6 means turning your body into a rancid body. In nature, you wouldn't get too many of those fatty acids, just the right amount. Today, we have a different environment. Today, we get way too much of either, of both, omega-6 and omega-3. But omega-6 is the biggest problem. We get so much of it today that we get inflamed. We get so much of the omega-6 in our soybean oils and soybeans, in our corn oil, in a safflower oil, peanuts and peanut oil, canola oil. We get so much omega-6 in all of those manufactured oils from seeds that we have no choice but to take more omega-3 to offset that. But we are paying the price. What kind of price are we paying? Back in the 40s, farmers were trying to fatten their pigs very fast so they can sell them by the weight. How do you fatten pigs? You have to just destroy their metabolism. How do you do that? You give them a thyrotoxic drug, a drug that destroys their thyroid gland. When that happens, they have very slow metabolism and they grow very fat, very fast. So in a short time, you can sell more pounds of pigs to the market. So they gave them thyrotoxic drugs, not knowing what will be the outcome. Unfortunately for the farmers, within a couple of years, and sometime less than that, the pigs would develop cancer. Nobody wanted to buy the pigs when they had cancer. So what did they do? They found an alternative. How to make thyroids go into a hypofunctioning state? How about give them a lot of soybeans? Lots of corn, lots of high omega-6 fatty acid foods, and even other seeds that might contain some omega-3, but mostly omega-6. Those polyunsaturated fatty acid had a very thyrotoxic effect and made the pigs grow fat very fast as well, but without causing them immediate cancer. The cancer would have developed a little bit later after they slaughtered them, so people would buy them without being worried. That is how the farmers learned the secret of suppressing thyroid function, by trying all those seeds that were never fed to pigs in the past when they were out to pasture. Now, we have to see what are the physiological effects of having too much of the polyunsaturated fatty acids in your body. What is the effect? First, free radical damage, because we said that polyunsaturated fatty acids like omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids can easily become rancid. If they get into your body and they're still not rancid, they will become rancid because of your own oxygen free radicals and nitrogen free radicals, of which we have plenty. The more animal products you eat containing nitrogen, the more nitrogen free radicals you're going to have, and the greater the rancidity of the oils that you ate. So your own diet will determine how much rancidity you are likely to develop. And most people eat a lot of nitrogen-rich foods, dairy products, animal products, and legumes, very rich with nitrogen, especially the animal products. That makes your whole body susceptible to rancidity, and every time you eat a polyunsaturated fatty acid, it's at very high risk of becoming rancid within your body after ingestion. That's also because your body is warm. These polyunsaturated fatty acids are designed for cold climate. Why is it that cold water fish contains omega-3 fatty acids? Because omega-3 fatty acids have enough kinks in them. Every double bond introduces a kink in the long chain of carbons. Those kinks assure the fish of a liquid state of fat within it. That liquid state allows the fish to swim. Otherwise, it would be like a piece of log floating in the water. It wouldn't be able to move. That's the fish. Why do some seeds in cold climates do the same thing? Why do they have omega-3 fatty acids within them, ALA? Because in cold climates, they need to germinate early in spring when it's still very cold, because they have to come to seeds by the end of summer, and the summer is very short. They wouldn't survive if they didn't germinate when it's still extremely cold in very early spring. So they need their fats to be available as a source of energy. It has to be in a semi-liquid state. That's why in nature, you have omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids in large amounts in colder climates. But when you come to the human body, you have to ask yourself, where did our physiology get forged? Where did we come from? As a species, we came from the tropics. the East Horn of Africa. We came from an area that was tropical at the equator. And that is the area where our physiology was adapted to cold, no, to warm temperature. That's why in our body, we don't have a very high amount of polyunsaturated fatty acid. We have a lot of saturated fatty acid, like we have in other animals. We don't want too much of the polyunsaturated fatty acids because they will go rancid in our body. In nature, we were protected because all the polyunsaturates that we took, that we ate, came with a lot of vitamins and antioxidants that naturally occurred in green leafy vegetables, our main source in nature of stable omega-3 fatty acids, in nature. But today, how fresh is your green leafy vegetable when you eat it? Not very fresh. It's been picked maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago, 3 days ago, whatever it might be. It's not so fresh anymore, and it's been exposed to heat, oxygen, and light, all three of which are the main causation for rancidity. Heat, oxygen, and light. So every food you eat that has polyunsaturated fatty acids in it, if it is not kept in the dark, in refrigeration, and in a non-oxygenated environment, it will go rancid even before it gets into your body. For example, flax oil goes rancid in 20 minutes in room temperature. If you grind flax, ground flax goes rancid in about a day in room temperature. Just to give you an example of how severe this problem is, and nobody tells you about it. You eat stuff like that and you go rancid. It destroys all of your body's system because free radicals act like a domino effect. And they cause aging, premature degeneration. That's the negative aspect of free radicals. Also, the polyunsaturated fatty acids affect our thyroid gland, as we said with the pigs. They make the pigs fat prematurely. So thyrotoxic effect changes what happens with our hormones, because the thyroid is in charge of converting cholesterol into sex hormones and stress hormones. All of those hormones are going to be imbalanced if we have a thyrotoxic effect. And our immune system is going to be damaged as well, because DHEA, a crucial immune modulator, a hormone that we manufacture in our adrenal gland, is also deriving from cholesterol, also dependent on thyroid function. So you see how premature aging, how tendency towards gaining weight, how immune imbalance, how all chronic diseases related to free radical damage and hormonal imbalance are all affected by polyunsaturated oil that we eat too much of. The biggest problem is that we eat too many omega-6 oils, because most of the cheap oil that we buy processed in the market are oils containing high amounts of omega-6. And that is one reason why we are all tending to be inflamed, because omega-6 becomes easily arachidonic acid within our tissues. Arachidonic acid is the precursor to inflammatory messengers called prostaglandins. Those inflammatory messengers must be countered in order to lower the inflammation. Every chronic disease you know, from cancer to diabetes to cardiovascular disease, to autoimmune disease, to skin disorders, to vision issues, everything is associated with these free radicals and with this inflammation. You must, therefore, do something to lower the inflammation. That's why people are selling you fish oils to get more omega-3, so you can offset the excessive inflammation in your body. And indeed, when you take fish oil At least it used to be that way. You would get some anti-inflammatory effect because omega-3 counters the effect of omega-6 fatty acids. So they gave you fish oil, but now you're getting so many poisons with it, and most of it is so rancid it's not doing much good anymore. People are getting some omega-3 from it, some EPA and DHA derivatives, but a lot of that comes with pollution and toxins that you don't want. In addition, the fish oil has a lot of EPA and DHA instead of ALA. ALA is what your body would have gotten in high amounts in nature from green leafies and some nuts. How do we know? Because the vast majority of omega-3 oil, almost the entire amount of omega-3 oil in mother's milk and in the umbilical cord are ALA, not EPA and DHA. ALA. That's what the baby is getting in breast milk. That's what the baby is getting from the placenta. Almost entirely ALA. And the baby is converting it into EPA and DHA as needed. That's crucial. Because if you get EPA and DHA in pharmacological doses, as is the case when you get fish oil, you will have a stronger anti-inflammatory effect because of the EPA, but you will also have a very strong immune-suppressing effect. Your natural killer cells' activity will diminish by 49% on average, according to scientific studies. So when you take EPA in large amounts, you are poisoning your immune system. In addition, EPA has five double bonds, not just three. ALA has three. Three double bonds is unstable enough. But imagine five double bonds. That is so unstable. It's 25 times more unstable than ALA. So you're getting extremely susceptible fatty acids that are rancid extremely fast when you get EPA in large amounts. And when you get DHA to put into your brain and into your eye, which is the main reason why children and babies and pregnant women are getting DHA, that has six double bonds. Even more unstable. In our own body, we manufacture DHA from ALA just in the right amount and in the right place to prevent rancidity and to prevent damage. Where do we make those DHA molecules from ALA? In the liver and in the brain. And when we make them in the brain, we also make other compounds that protect the highly unstable DHA from going rancid. But if you take it pre-made into your mouth, and it goes through the digestive system, which is really warm, juicy, and then absorb it, it will go rancid because there's no protection. So most of the EPA and DHA you take orally are going to be rancid. Plus they have other toxic elements like the EPA. That's what happened with fish oil. It is not physiological. In nature, humans were not swimming in cold water. It's highly uncomfortable for us with our warm bodies. Try to go to a near freezing temperature and swim in it and see how long you survive. That's the only place you would be able to catch that cold water fish to get that omega-3. However, the industry tries to overcome that common sense and convince you to keep buying that by telling you some things. For instance, that you cannot convert ALA in sufficient quantities to EPA and DHA in your body. That's what they will tell you, so that you will be convinced that you have to buy fish oil, even though it's anti-physiology, even though it's anti-biochemistry. It does not fit the human physiology. But they will still sell it by telling you we cannot convert. However, recent studies in the last 2 years have shown that this is not the case. A big study with thousands of subjects in England proved conclusively, and a firefighter studies in the US also proved conclusively that people who take ALA, whether it's in a supplement form or in food form, versus people who take fish oil, EPA and DHA, regardless of which source of omega-3 they took, at the end, they all had the same DHA in their body. Which means that your body manufactures enough DHA from ALA. It simply increases its production when you are not eating pre-made, preformed EPA and DHA. And when you do, the body makes less. But you are going to get a lot of rancidity and a lot of damage and toxicity, because it's not made by your own body in the right compartment where it can be protected. So nature tells us, trust your body to do the job. Professor Crawford, the father of omega-3 fatty acids, has established that the half-life of DHA in the brain is 2.5 years, meaning it takes 2.5 years to lose 50% of the DHA in the brain. That means we are extremely good at recycling DHA in the brain and not losing it, which translates to an extremely low level of DHA that we must manufacture every day to support our brain, a level of only 3.8 milligrams per day. That's a tiny amount that even the worst people to convert ALA to DHA, even the ones who have the lowest level of conversion, will have more than enough if they get sufficient dose of ALA, as long as it is not rancid and does not cause damage. So what are you getting from all this information so far? You're not getting gloom and doom, you're getting information.
Hold on.
Good.
I don't know how many people here have some medical background as I have. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Excellent.
To give us lay people any information that
excellent.
We use and digest.
I'm about to tell you all that. Have a seat, please.
More about telling us how good you are. You haven't even given us your CV. The introduction didn't tell us where you
thank you. Thank you. Okay, have a seat. Thank you for that. I appreciate your comment. And I was just about to give you exactly that information. So thank you. It's perfect timing. I was about to give you that information about what to do, what the people should actually do to keep healthy. Now, the information I'm telling you is throughout the entire medical literature. It is biochemistry. It is physiology. It is the most fundamental science. It is not the kind of clinical science that anybody can manufacture. Therefore, you should be happy to get it. It's not gloom and doom, as you shall hear. It is actually a source for hope and truth to give you something that is not manufactured by people who are simply trying to sell you products for many billions of dollars. I am giving you the warning signs that you are seeing all over the media, that the lawsuits are giving you. That's the most important part. So what do we learn from everything that we've said so far? So now we get into the practical aspect. And I'm glad and I hope that everybody here has been stewing like this gentleman. Because the more stewing you are, the more you'll be paying attention to what I'm going to tell you now. So that's a good thing. First of all, what you're learning from this is, unlike what we've been told by people who try to sell us products, the most important thing is to listen to nature, because nature is not trying to sell us anything. Nature is simply trying to give us the kind of foods that our physiology has been adapting to for millions of years. For example, nature tells us not to try and overdo the polyunsaturated fatty acids. The industry has been telling us since the 40s to have more polyunsaturated and less saturated oils. The industry has been trying to tell us to avoid coconut oil because it is saturated. But it is actually stable thanks to its saturation. And we want saturated oil that is tropical like coconut oil. That's where we come from. So here's your first takeout point. Eat coconut oil. That is stable. And don't eat too much polyunsaturated fats from vegetables, from seeds, because they are likely to go rancid. Of course, the biggest industry, Monsanto and others that make lots of seeds, will want you to eat more of their soybeans, more of their corn, just like they feed the pigs to make them fat. They do the same with us. So that's the first point. The second is try to prevent your polyunsaturated fats with all those double bonds, basic biochemistry. Anybody knows that, whether they have credentials or not? Try to prevent those polyunsaturated fatty acids from becoming rancid. So don't expose them to heat, light, and oxygen. And don't eat too much of them because they will go rancid within your own body, which is already warm. Basic physiology, basic biochemistry. The next thing to note is that there are many sources of polyunsaturates in food that are being sold to you as a source of omega-3 fatty acid. That's because we already have been told many times that we need to get omega-3 oils. And it's true, we need more omega-3 oils just to offset the excessive amounts of omega-6 that we have been eating in all those soybean and safflower oil and canola oil and other source of omega-6 oils. So first you have to avoid omega-6 oils. You can eat the seeds containing omega-6, but don't take the oils from them, because that's too much. Even then, you will still have too much omega-6, because in our society, we have no choice but to eat more grains and legumes and seeds containing omega-6 by comparison to nature, where we would have eaten a lot of dark green leafy vegetables. Look at every chimpanzee and gorilla and monkey. They are up in the tree eating green leaves all day long. A lot of omega-3, but in small amounts with lots of fiber, lots of phytonutrients, lots of antioxidants that protect those oils. And when they eat seeds, they are 100% fresh, straight from the tree. The walnuts, the pecans, the pumpkin seeds, everything is fresh, had not had enough chance to go rancid, and it has vitamin E within it to keep it fresh. Vitamin E protects it from going rancid. So we are going to have a lot more omega-6 today than we want to. Therefore, we want to increase our omega-3. But we don't want to have our omega-3 in a food form, because in a food form, it's going to be excessive, rancid, and potentially toxic. Here is why. If you have omega-3 from flax, for example, we already established how it can go rancid very, very fast. So having flax seeds once in a while is not the end of the world. Maybe once a week, twice a week. But it cannot be a good source of daily omega-3, because a lot of it would go rancid, and because flax has some other problems with it. If you eat a lot, it has some of the compounds from the cyanide family. It still has some compounds from the cyanide family. And even if you refrigerate it, it has to be wholesome. And a lot of people grind it and keep it in the fridge for a long time. It gets rancid anyway. And in your body, it can go rancid still. So you don't want to overdo flaxseed. You can do it once in a while, but if you do it every day, you will also have a high likelihood of becoming allergic to it, because it has many of the allergenic proteins. There are at least 6 kilodalton types of proteins that are potentially rancid, as potentially allergenic in flax. So you can say, okay, I can get some ALA from flax, but it's not the best source. You can get some of it as long as you don't overdo it to get too much omega-3 and get too much rancidity. Or you can get omega-3 from chia seeds. But chia seeds are not a good source of omega-3 because they have various toxins that have been established, like alpha-humulin, beta-pinene, beta-caryophyllene, and a few others. So there are various toxins in chia seeds that make them not a good source of omega-3. Plus, they also have very undigestible, poor quality proteins that turn out to be allergenic if you eat them very regularly. So if you had a little bit of wholesome chia once a week, it's probably not the end of the world. But if you start using it regularly as a source of omega-3, it will be very unnatural. Plus, chia seeds contain excessively unstable omega-3 oil that can also have the same problem with flax oil. Goes rancid very easily. So it's not a good source. It's not a natural source of omega-3 because most people have never heard about it as even being a food until just a couple of years ago. It's a recent fad. It hasn't been a real food, and there are good reasons for that. What other sources are there? Walnuts. Walnuts and pumpkin seeds are good sources of omega-3. But again, to get enough omega-3 to offset the omega-6 excess that we all suffer from, we have to get too much walnuts. And they have to be completely fresh so that the rancidity problem will not occur. You need to have a lot of walnuts, but in nature, you would not be able to eat walnuts every day for an entire year as a source of omega-3. To get that quantity, you would also have to get a lot of other fats, and you'd probably gain weight. Plus, if you have a lot of those proteinaceous walnuts, you will develop an allergy to them. In nature, we only have a very short season during which we can enjoy the walnuts. So you can start seeing how we cannot just take a food and turn it into a good source of omega-3 unless we rotate it. So one day we can have a little bit of walnuts, one day a little bit of pumpkin seeds, but most of the time we have to get our omega-3 from green leafy vegetables, which in nature you would have eaten in large amounts all day long. Not very practical, is it? Most of us don't have the time to eat greens all day long. If we did, we would have had a lot of omega-3 fatty acids that are stable, and we wouldn't have had too much omega-6, and we wouldn't need to offset it. I'll let you ask questions in a few minutes. So this is a very important topic. What else is a source of omega-3? How about algae? Everybody knows about DHA from algae. There's a very good source of DHA that people can benefit from. But again, it's lacking the ALA, which our own body would have used from green leafy vegetables to manufacture the EPA and DHA. Plus algae, if it grows in polluted water or in water that's lined with plastic, can absorb some of the toxins and we wouldn't know. And you would need a huge quantity of algae to give you the amount of omega-3 that you would have had in nature if you ate greens all day long. So most of the sources that we have of omega-3 fatty acids are not as good as what nature wanted us to do. First thing, we have to eliminate excessive omega-6. And then if you are taking an omega-3 source, try not to take it from foods that are rich in protein and in omega-3, like some seeds that we mentioned, because of the potential problems that occur with them. Instead, try and find an omega-3 supplement that is extremely stable, that is coming from a plant source that has ALA and that does not have the risk of rancidity. So fish oil is definitely out. And I haven't even talked about the ecology and the problem with decimation of marine life, which occurs as a result of excessive harvesting of our oceans and lakes and seas. So that's just an overview of what we should be avoiding in terms of omega-3 according to the physiology and biochemistry of the human body. Not according to what a lot of industries would try to sell you to increase your omega-3 no matter what at the risk of going rancid. Personally, I have never used omega-3 supplements. Because for 15 years I've been lecturing about the rancidity effect and its negative impact on our brain, on our rancidity issue, on our thyroid, on our metabolism, on our hormones and immune system. So I avoided them altogether, but I also avoided all the omega-6 oils, which most people don't do. They eat canola oil all the time. They eat packaged and processed foods containing omega-6 rich oils. If you avoid those, you'd be in a much better place. When you do eat any omega-6 and omega-3 oils, you have to keep them fresh. You have to keep them in the refrigerator. All your nuts and seeds should be refrigerated. Don't keep them in your cupboard, in your cabinet. Protect them. Try and get them from shops where they are already held in the refrigerator, so that they haven't gone rancid while they are waiting to be purchased by you. And when you do grind them, use them right away. Don't dehydrate them. Don't cook with them, because they will go rancid. And if you are taking a supplement of omega-3, make sure it is in a supplement capsule form so you don't get too much of it. I just had a few months ago a very interesting conversation with a very world-renowned biochemist who specializes in omega-3 and omega-6 oils. He wrote a famous book about it. And he makes his own brand of omega-3, omega-6, omega-9 oil. And I asked him, why is it that you are making an oil containing omega-6 and omega-3 source within it? And he said, well, because a lot of people who are taking omega-3 supplements don't have enough omega-6. And that is also bad. They need to have more omega-6. And I said, okay, I understand that, because obviously it's true that if you check red blood cell membranes, you have more omega-6 in them than omega-3. And it's true that if you only take omega-3 supplements, you may have omega-6 deficiency. It's kind of rare, but it could happen. It's rare in people who eat lots of nuts and seeds and packaged food with soybean oil and corn oil, etc. But he had this issue with people who are not having enough omega-6. So he put them both into his oil. And I asked him, don't you think that this is excessive? Now they're getting real oil that they're going to pour over their salad that has your name on it, because they need omega-3 and omega-6, and they're going to pour it and put it into their cooking and have too much of both omega-3 and omega-6, which in nature they would have had very little of both. But in nature, the balance would have been on a very small scale. And you know what he said? He said, well, even if that's what nature says, nature doesn't want us to be healthy. He said, nature wants us to die young, because we don't want to be overpopulating the earth. And it is better for us not to live beyond 40. We have good examples of Eskimos, you know, they can have an average lifespan of 40, but it's long enough to, you know, have children and grandchildren, and therefore they're okay. So I said to him, but are you telling me that you're going to sell your oil to the general population on the premise that it will help them not live a long and healthy life? You think that they're going to buy it on that basis? To that he had no response.
Do you have the name of that person?
I cannot say his name.
You know, I don't believe that story. But unless you're willing to give the name of the person that said it, I don't believe you either. I think you are self-interested in this.
Really?
Just like the industry does.
Okay.
You've been making your living giving these talks forever. I don't believe that story.
Well, I guarantee you that this story is true. And after the talk, I'll be happy to share the name with you. And you can know that it's true simply by looking on the shelf of every supermarket. You will see.
That doesn't mean a thing to me. Okay. I'm a
Good. Okay. You heard biochemistry, which is science. You heard.
So,
did you hear about double bonds? That was not biochemistry? Okay. Yes.
Three most famous doctors in America, Dr. Weil, Dr. Oz, and Dr. Edel, mm-hmm. all I have heard from their own lips, fish oil. I take fish oil. Mm-hmm. For me? And been doing it for many years. Mm-hmm. I'm past my 80th birthday. I have no prescriptions. None. I don't need to clap. I think maybe it's in my genes, perhaps.
Right.
But am I doing something wrong? Are these three doctors, are they a product of capitalism or what?
Well, I cannot speak on their behalf. All I can say is there is a major industry and there's a mainstream. We have many examples. I can give you off the bat about 10 different examples of how the system, the industry, has permeated the consciousness of the teachers, not just the public. And as a result, we don't always follow the science. We follow what's common at that time. But every 10 or 20 or 30 years, we have a shift in paradigm and we realize that we were wrong in the past. Your personal situation is wonderful, and you're right, it might be your genetics. That's why we're talking about
The reason I take the fish oil is because I don't eat any fish or seafood because I don't like it. And if I don't like it, I don't eat it. So is there any particular brand of fish oil that you would recommend for those that choose that option?
Personally, I would not recommend any fish oil for all the reasons that I mentioned earlier. If you are going to have anything that is from a marine source, then you might as well eat the whole fish. But if you are eating fish, make sure it's the kind of fish that you can eat.
I don't eat fish.
Yeah, then, you know, neither have I ever eaten any fish. And people who don't eat fish in indigenous places in the world, people who don't have access to fish because they live, for instance, in Papua New Guinea, far away from the water and they have no fish, they don't seem to have any problem having no fish at all. Just because it's being recommended for many years does not mean that it is necessarily good, especially in light of everything I mentioned today. So I don't recommend any fish oil.
You recommend not to eat fish?
Well, depends. Nowadays, it's a problem. In the past, it wasn't a big problem to eat fish if you could capture it and if you could eat it in its natural state. You know, I always look at people who are eating fish when they fish for it themselves. And I try to see what they have to go through before it becomes edible. Many of them have to use very harsh product to clean up the scales and before it can become soft enough so they can actually eat it. But there are some fish that you can eat in their raw state in nature because they are soft and pliable. And then I have nothing against it. If you can capture it in nature and eat it, I have nothing against eating it. But that's not the topic for today. Yes. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you very much. I think it's valuable and wonderful information, which I'm going to pay attention to. Just to finish with the fish, are there still areas in the ocean, they say, you know, deep ocean fish is better and not polluted? And then I hear soy products, especially if they're not too processed, would have isoflavones, which can protect you against cancer, but then I hear there's too many phytoestrogens, so I'm very confused about that. And one holistic doctor also warned against flax because of the phytoestrogens.
Right, yeah, flax has three times the amount of phytoestrogens as soy does. You know, nobody has proven it either way, but we know that it's a possibility. And we don't want to overdo something that in nature we wouldn't have been doing. You know, whenever you don't know for sure about something, especially when humans have created it, you have to go back to nature and say, have we been exposed to soy in any quantity to speak of during our evolution? And we know that soybean have never been a food until 2,000 years ago.
Yes. Attention. They're eating
They have, today they do, but they still don't eat as much as we do. They eat a lot of fermented, small amount as garnish. They don't have soy in a large quantity like we do. And they have so many other variables in their lifestyle that we cannot just have deduction just on the basis of what they do with soy.
And I eat soy cheeses.
Right. Well, if you eat soy, make sure it's organic and not genetically modified, and do it only infrequently. Don't do it every day like some people do. Yes?
Two questions. One, I hear you don't advise flax seeds. If one did want to take flax seed, would you keep the whole seeds in the freezer and then grind them just as you use them? Does that keep it fresher?
Yes. The colder the environment will be, the less rancid they will get.
Okay.
And if you eat them right away after grinding them.
Okay.
That would be the best approach, but don't do them every day.
Right.
Because I know enough people who have been doing them daily and recommending them daily and themselves having become highly allergic to them.
Okay.
Make sure you give your body a break.
The other question is, you just mentioned krill oil, and a lot of doctors are now recommending krill rather than the fish oil. What do you think about the krill oil?
Yeah, it's the latest fad. Like we said earlier, every time people have a new idea of what's negative in the marine department of omega-3, they immediately are looking for a substitute because there's already acceptance in the public. Krill oil also has high amounts of DHA and an EPA, which is pharmacological doses that could potentially be a problem. It also grows in extremely cold water, and therefore it is not made for tropical environments as in the human body. And there are other issues with that that are not necessary to expand on.
So you've convinced me to stop taking my fish oil, and so I'm trying to now figure out what I should be taking. So it sounds like you said I should eat more salad in terms of leafy greens. And what else should I be eating?
Well, besides the dark green leafies, you can have, like I said earlier, the rotation of foods like walnuts and pumpkin seeds and other seeds that have a higher level of omega-3. And if you want to take a supplement, you'll have to take it as a capsule as opposed to as an oil. And it has to come from an established, stable source of ALA from plants. If you want to ask Anna, she can tell you later about one type of stable omega-3 oil that comes from plants.
Yeah, I was going to ask, can you tell us what that is so we don't have to individually talk to Anna? What's a stable source, plant-based?
Am I allowed to say?
Slip it. I'm calling this or something.
Well, there is one stable source that's been proven stable from over 2 years in room temperature, and it's called clary sage seed oil.
What is it?
Clary sage seed oil. Yes. Now, as soon as there are other sources of ALA that are proven to be stable through third-party analysis and laboratory analysis, I would be the first one to recommend them as well.
Would you repeat that?
Clary sage seed oil.
How do you spell it?
C-L-A-R-Y.
Uh-huh.
Sage. S-A-G-E. Seed oil. You're welcome.
What about
hemp seed? Which one?
Hemp seed oil.
That's a very good question. Hemp seeds grow in extremely cold climate in places where no people should live. Canada. No. Very, very cold atmosphere and extremely high in omega-3 for that reason, but extremely unstable for that reason. So unstable, in fact, that hemp is the only source I know of stereodonic acid, which is not ALA, but an omega-3 acid that has four double bonds instead of three. Four double bonds makes hemp seed oil even more unstable. So I would never consider eating hemp as a source of omega-3 oil. Plus, hemp seeds are extremely rich with protein. that is potentially allergenic if you eat every day as a source of omega-3. So I'll have no problem with you having a tablespoon of hemp seeds if you do that once a month or once every 2 weeks. But if you take it as a source of omega-3 regularly, it can pose some problems, especially the rancidity aspect, steridonic acid.
Okay. Our thanks today to Dr. Adil Til Oren for his comments. And we also thank our audiences here as well as those listening to this recording. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 108th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.